Broadcasting from the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, this is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.
Stand by. Accessing primary security protocols. Your access has been approved. Welcome to Level 11P7.
Sci-Fi For Me Radio, this is Level 11D7. Jason Hunt here in the bunker, along with Dan Handley.
Hello.
And Christopher Pryor.
Hi there.
And we're on the short bus tonight in a conspiracy to have me continue participating in the show.
we'll call it the compact car.
Yes. Well, Maya,
more than the short bus.
Maya has taken ill. Maya AIDS. Cammy is still out dealing with some family things, and nothing serious. But she's out. And then Tim Harvey had a social engagement he was committed to this evening. So it's just the three of us here this evening.
Okay. Big group.
The episode Purpose in the Machine. And I think we've got three or four different meanings for that. First of all, the purpose in the Kree portal machine. The purpose in the machine to control the Kree portal machine. The purpose in the Hydra machine. The purpose behind the Secret Warriors machine. I mean,
I'm sure we can find a lot of machines here.
I seem to detect a little bit of a theme going through in tonight's episode.
They flew there on a plane, and I'm sure there was a purpose in that machine, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, but that wasn't a plot point machine. That wasn't it. But what I liked about it is the fact that it wasn't Hand of the Writer-ish machines. Which is something that we've run across before, but
yes.
interesting episode tonight. I'm glad that they didn't drag out Simmons being missing forever.
Yeah,
we got some resolution on that. The episode basically
there's going to be fallout from it. You know that.
Oh, sure,
a lot
sure.
Probably for the rest of the season. At least.
Well, and a lot of it's going to be psychological on Simmons' part.
Yes.
But I think also that's going to have some impact on her relationship with Fitz.
Well, the two of them, I mentioned to you after the show, after we watched it, how at the beginning of the very first season, they were just so, the two of them, Fitz and Simmons, were just such innocent people, you know. Now they're pretty well scarred.
Yeah.
Well, I'm, it's like Coulson said tonight, you know, it's been rough.
You know, to say the least.
And when he's sitting there and he's talking to the Asgardian Professor Elliot Randolph, played by Peter McNichol, he's just like, you know, it's been a rough year. You know, what's with the hand? It's been a rough year.
Yes.
You know, he's lost his hand. He's lost half his team. We finally get some information on where Agent May has been sequestered all this time.
Learning to play golf.
Learning to play golf with her dad, James Hong.
Yes.
Oh, I saw.
Love to see that guy.
James Hong on there. I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be good. Yeah, James Hong playing Agent May's dad. Now, so far, now we've seen mom, now we've seen dad.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine the two of them in the same room together?
Oh, geez.
That'll be fun.
Alluded to they don't really talk
much. Yeah, they don't
much.
Get along. Yeah. Yeah.
Call on occasion just to see if he's alive.
And, you know, it's funny because, you know, in all of these different things that we had in this episode, I think May had the least to do.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we got quite a bit of character development from her.
Yes.
Just in her backstory with her dad, you know, the different things about, you know, the ice skating and the martial arts and the trophies and this kind of thing. And he's like, you're very much your mother's daughter. And it's all the silence and everything.
And the secrets and the...
Yeah, there's all the little bits and pieces that you get paranoia. Between people who have known each other for a long time. So that was good to see.
I wonder how many other people in that family.
You know, I would not be surprised to find out that she's an only child.
I was thinking the same thing, but you never know. There's always the chance to have other subplots come
in. She may have maybe a brother, but I would suspect that she's an only child.
She's either an only child or the oldest She could come off as an oldest.
Either or.
We just need another scene of them painting across old photos. And sure. Oh, there's the one with three of them. That was just the one when you were three. Then there was this child, and then there was this child. We just hadn't seen the whole shelf.
I don't know. I think she's an only child.
Probably.
That's my personal opinion, but, you know.
Probably, but it's just a curiosity. Maybe there's, like, aunts and uncles or something like that.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, you know, Asian families are very big.
Yeah.
Yeah, typically. So I would expect that there's quite a few relatives somewhere. Speaking of relatives, we get the reveal tonight that Baron von Strucker has some progeny. Young Lord Strucker.
Little bit of offspring.
Yes, that's going to be interesting to see Spencer Treat Clark playing this character, Alexander von Strucker. And since we've got Baron Zemo coming in during Captain America: Civil War, I wonder if they're going to make any kind of a connection between the two.
How many barons can they bring in?
You know, I don't know. See, because this Baron Zemo that's showing up is going to be the son of Baron Zemo that Captain America fought in the 40s.
Oh,
so it's a generational thing. So I'm wondering if maybe the whole Von Strucker Zemo thing is going to be a thing. That did you guys see the fan made leaked trailer for Civil War?
No, I haven't. I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
It was actually pretty well done, and it does look like it's a leaked trailer, but it's you know, it's clearly on a computer screen, not on a movie theater screen. But they there's pieces of the Avengers movies in there, and there's pieces of the other Captain America movies, and you know, clips from Patton and Eisenhower and Kennedy, and it does a pretty good job setting up the story that we are expecting to see in Civil War.
The Inhuman is the enemy.
Well, the thing is that this whole Registration Act thing is something that's going to be building. We're building in this season toward that. I imagine we'll get to the mid-season, and that's about when things are just going to completely fall apart right in time for the movie to come out.
Well, I guess probably at least they're going to have to develop more with this whole portal thing, because if it does build up to the movie, then we're going to – I imagine we're going to either expect the movie to put the final pin in this thing.
Well, the portal's gone. The portal was destroyed tonight.
Yeah, the portal was destroyed, but it's got to open doors to something. It can't just be just this random MacGuffin that came and was present for two episodes and then it had no further consequence.
Well, it's maybe not as much the portal as the place, but what is the significance of that planet?
Well, I have a yes, you're right. I have a feeling, because some people are wondering if it's the Kree homeworld. Some people are wondering if it's one of the moons. I think Hala is the name of one of the Kree moons that was used in development of technology that the Kree used. But it certainly does put it in the Guardians of the Galaxy territory.
Right.
Which, if Simmons was being chased by something, and of course we didn't see what that something was, but...
Budget restraints.
Well, maybe it's a tease to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2...
They're Jehovah's Witnesses that really don't take no for an answer.
Well, I'm wondering if that's the connection that they're going to be making, because you've got, you know, like we said before, they're playing a long game with the Inhuman storyline, because you've got between now and 2019 when the movie comes out. So you got a lot of time to lay groundwork and tease things and stretch it out. And as long as you're not doing it in a way that just starts to get tedious, I think they're going to be okay. But there's a lot of material to mine there with the whole Inhumans thing. They could start, you know, putting out drips and drabs and pieces and bits and bobbles all the way through and not run out of things that they could do up until 2019. Because we've still got not only Captain Marvel coming, who has a Kree connection.
Right.
But I think, you know, we're starting to lay the groundwork for the Inhumans and the Kree. That was the beginning of all that. That's where that artifact came from, is a Kree artifact. Excuse me, a Kree artifact. So that establishes that connection with the Guardians of the Galaxy universe. I have a feeling that at some point Inhumans and Guardians of the Galaxy would cross over in some way, shape, or form. There's going to be a connection out there, because that's Galactic Marvel. That's what they call the cosmic side of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, yeah. True.
And they're talking about dragging it out. It almost seems like the actual Inhumans that they're discovering are kind of trickling in on the story.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they've got all these other plot lines to go, that'll give them plenty of time to, you know, every so often let them trickle in and then establish establish.
Yeah, it's like in football. It's a building year. Right?
Right.
Understandably, you want to make sure that if you're bringing somebody on board your team, they're in control.
Right.
And, you know, with Andrew, Dr. Andrew Garner, coming in to evaluate these people psychologically, I wouldn't expect them to put Joey Gutierrez on the team yet, because mm-hmm. he's just now gotten his powers.
Right.
And he's freaked out. And, you know, this is going to take time. It's been 6 months since the end of last season.
Mm-hmm.
Daisy's just now learned to control her powers, and we don't know how long it took Lincoln to learn to control his, but it's not going to be one of those things. It's like, hey, you got powers. Welcome to the team. You know, you're going to have not only do you have a period of psychological adjustment, but you also have to learn how to control it.
And then you've also got to get testing to make sure they can trust you.
Yeah, and then you have to learn, you know, not only learning how to control that power, but also how to constructively use that power, you know, to direct the power. You know, I want this thing to melt, not this thing over here, you know. And as we saw tonight with Daisy learning to control her power to generate a particular subharmonic, you know, subsonic sound.
And then even once you get to that point, you have to ask the question, is this person qualified to be a spy?
Exactly.
This is espionage they're dealing with here. This is subterfuge.
If a person can't keep their mouth shut and has to tell everybody everything, do not trust them with national security.
Nope.
Yes, we've seen the results of that before, haven't we? Interesting that Coulson is still calling her Sky.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And he's the only one. Everybody else, it's Daisy.
It's honestly, I'm kind of with him. It's still Sky in my head. It feels weird.
It's hard to shake.
Yeah, because we had 2 whole years of calling this person Sky, and now it's like, no, it's Daisy now. I'm a different character, different name.
Well, yeah, and when and Tim and I have talked about this, the fact that when Ward finally dies, you know, it's going to be Sky. No, it's Daisy now. Daisy. You know, it's one of those things. Everybody's got to adjust.
Uh-huh.
But I think it says something about Coulson that he hasn't adjusted yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it says something about where his head is in all of this, because there are some things when you're faced with things that are so overwhelming, your brain and your psyche kind of revert back to what you're familiar with, what you can control, what you know, opposed to just, you know, it's sometimes it's hard to make the adjustment.
You've also got the fact that Coulson is really clingy.
You think?
Oh yeah.
Well,
he likes his stuff. He likes things to stay as samey as possible.
There's also
hence why they've got a plane that still has their symbol on the top. Because I don't want to take it off because I like it.
Oh, that was funny though. Yeah.
They finally referred to that. It's hilarious.
But that's very true about his character. I mean, he loves holding on to every MacGuffin they have. He loves all their gizmos and gadgets. He loves keeping this team together. Mm-hmm. I got to have all my same people.
Right.
Who did I have in season one? Well, I got to have those same people again.
Well, except for maybe Ward.
Well, I think it's interesting that, I use that word a lot tonight. Coulson is one of those people that I think likes known quantities.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like to be surprised. By his own people. He doesn't like things coming out from left field in his realm. I mean, if you've got other things that are going on outside of his circle, then that stuff he can't control. But, you know, he's director of S.H.I.E.L.D. He is in charge. He is, you know, the guy that's got the team.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of almost, he really doesn't like the wild cards, is what it comes down to.
Right.
And yet he brought in Sky in season one, who was the biggest wild card he probably could have brought in.
But you think about it, him calling her Sky, because here she is, now that she's got the powers, she's becoming a leader. That was definitely pointed out tonight.
Yes.
You know, talking about she's really getting into a leadership type of mentality.
Well, and Coulson's seen her as a protege for a while.
Exactly. But the thing is, when she became Daisy, she also almost a tipping point to her becoming that leader thing. And for Coulson to still call her Sky, I think he still is almost protective of her and sees her as the protege, not as much as the leader.
That's a good point. That's a good point. That could very well be that he's not ready to let her leave the nest yet.
And everybody else is ready to say, all right, she's not exactly what she was. She's now this leader. She's this trusted agent and all this. All right, she's Daisy.
Although Andrew does point out that she needs to make sure that she's not rushing into a leadership role if she's not ready. Mm-hmm. Because she's trying to put this team together. She's just hot to trot. Get this team going.
Right.
And he's like, okay,
it's also a voice of caution.
Yeah.
You know. So I mean that may be her inexperience coming through, but then again,
oh, I think it is.
She's also discovered who she is. You know, she's almost found a new purpose,
right?
And so she's just wanting to run with it full tilt.
I think she's got good motivations for wanting to get people on the team. You know, it gives them a sense of purpose. It gives them a sense of belonging somewhere. Gives them a sense of identity. And I think when she's talking about that to Garner, wanting to give other Inhumans that place, I think we're also getting some insight into where her mindset is, you know, where her head is in the fact that that's what she has now. She sees that she's got a purpose and a place and a sense of belonging now that she knows who she is and she can control her powers and all of this. She has an identity that she can embrace,
right,
and she wants to give that to other Inhumans.
Mm-hmm. Not only to reach out to them, but probably to surround herself with like people as well. Because, I mean, yeah, she's her team has grown into like a family, but how many of them are super powered? Because, you know, Coulson doesn't exactly have the multi-capable use robot hand yet.
Not yet.
So
someday.
So he's just a prosthetic.
Yeah, you know, when he gets the Mark 47. Right.
He's got it in a desk drawer somewhere.
But I mean,
oh, sure.
I mean, yeah, the best.
When he first came in, he was like attaching his hand. What did he have on there in the first place? What were you doing, Coulson?
Well, now
what are you doing in your office?
We saw in the last episode when he comes back from a mission. Sometimes he'll take that off.
Yeah.
Because I think he's got more than one attachment. He's got more than one hand that he can.
But basically,
he can swap them out depending on what he needs to do.
He's got his pool cue hand.
well, basically, what it comes down to is, you know, there's not really any superpowers other than people who are really good fighters and secret agents. I mean, there's no superpowered people among the team.
Well,
other than, you know, Daisy. So she, of course, you know, wants to bring in people that are more like her.
Well, that and the whole purpose of the program, the Secret Warrior program, is designed to do an integrated team to prove that they can work together.
Right.
So you can go back to the president and say, hey, they can work together. And I think that's part of where we're leading into Civil War, where, you know, there's this effort to recruit some of them, and there's, you know, McNichols, Randolph was saying tonight, he's like, you've got your team, and now there's this special anti-alien task force thing, and there's this other thing out there killing them all. And I did you notice, and I don't know if it was Coulson or not. Yeah, it was Coulson when he was threatening Randolph, saying, help us, or I'll let this task force know where you are, and they can do alien autopsies on you.
Uh-huh.
That struck me as meaning that Coulson still thinks that what's her name? She's not Abigail Brand yet, but we Constance Zimmer's character.
Right.
The task force.
Yeah.
Coulson still thinks that they're capturing and killing.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw in the episode last week they're not. Because they were on the train. I was like, what do you mean? We're not killing them. Well, we're not killing them. I don't know if maybe Coulson didn't believe her or if he's just saying that to threaten Randolph into cooperating.
Maybe it's just been maybe name dropping because, you know, he's probably sure that these other organizations either won't care or won't dissect them, you know, but he's going to use that as leverage.
Could be.
Yeah, I'm sitting here still thinking about, you know, Sky bringing in all these others. I'm wondering
Daisy. Your name is Daisy.
Sorry. I'm still in the safe mentality. But I'm kind of wondering
we don't have a box you can put a dollar in. We don't have the Daisy box. But you know, there you get dinged on that.
Yeah, I would get dinged on that definitely. But I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if she brings these others in as part of her character, is she going to look at herself and her own worth based on how well she does with them and how well they do?
I don't think so, because she already seems to have her own sense of self. Mm-hmm. She seems to be fairly put together in terms of accepting who she is and knowing what her place is and that kind of thing. I think the team aspect of it, assuming it works, would give her some validation, but it also gives her something to prove that she can do something her mother didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's reflective of her own self, her sense of self value.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more, you know, purpose in the world type of thing.
I'm really excited that she's at this place, because for the past two seasons that she's been defined very much by her relationship, how she is so outside of whatever group she mm-hmm. finds herself mm-hmm. in. She's right. always been the lost child, this person adrift who finds herself with these other people and has to integrate into them. But now she's actually drawing them in.
Mm-hmm.
So it is making it a little difficult for me to actually get a grip on her character as a whole. Because I'm thinking back on the character, and I really am wondering, like, what is it that drives her? What is this character? And she's changed a lot, to be sure, but I am still now wondering, what is really at the core of Daisy Buchanan? Johnson. Sorry, who's Daisy Buchanan?
I don't know.
That's some other character.
I think it was like Sky Buchanan, maybe. I don't know.
It was just Sky.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah.
That just rolled off the tongue, Daisy.
Yeah, that's okay. Johnson. It happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think
it's just that character. We can't get her name right. That's all it is.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of answers they give to that. What is Daisy?
She's a leader. She's an enigma.
If she was a tree, what kind of tree would she be?
She'd be leaving, like we are, because we got to take a break. When we get back, we will do some more analysis on Fitz and Simmons and Hunter and May now going on the prowl looking for Ward. We'll look a little bit more at young Baron von Strucker and maybe what plans are coming to fruition with him when Level 117 continues right after this.
Podcasting is our superpower. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
All right, you all listening to Level 117, you are no doubt true believers of some stripe, as are we. And some of you are probably even fans of the Distinguished Competition. So, now that the first wave of DC Comics television shows are on the air, it's time to talk about them. Our new DC TV podcast, we call it The Rogues Gallery, and you can hear that same place you hear everything else, right here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
There are plenty of places to get your genre news. We get that. Which is why we go visit those places for you. And then we bring it all back here so it's all in one handy little place. Sci-Fi for Me is your one-stop shop for everything genre. Comic books, video games, TV, movies, the latest best-selling novels. Join us as we delve into the many story universes over a nice cup of coffee. We've got everything you need, all in one place. Sci-FiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
And now, back to level 11D7, the only 100% Hydra-free podcast on the internet. Hail Hydra!
Back on level 117, Jason Hunt here along with Christopher Pryor.
Hello.
And Daniel Hanley.
Hello.
And we are talking about tonight's episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Purpose in the Machine. The second episode of the new season in which we are kind of sort of getting the band back together a little bit.
A little bit.
Sort of. I mean, we've got... Fitz has rescued Simmons,
plot conveniency?
Well, no, I don't think it was plot conveniency. I think he was very bold. He didn't give up. Very determined, and that is something that we haven't seen in Fitz last season.
Right.
I think it's a nice... It's a nice turn back to his wanting to be part of the team and trying to prove himself in the first season. And a lot of that had to do with his relationship with Simmons. You know, Fitzsimmons was the team. And having one without the other kind of broke them both, I think. But now that we've got them back together, it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic has changed, because they've acknowledged how they feel about each other. Of course, the timing was terrible.
Oh, absolutely.
He's like, you want to talk about this now? and then she disappears for 6 months, and now she's back. And now they've each said to the other one, yes, there's some feelings here. Let's look into it. But, of course, now she's broken, you know, which is it's a turnaround from last season, because they almost died at the end of the first season. They come back to the second season. She's gone. He's broken mentally.
And
with the aphasia and everything.
Right.
And now it's been 6 months again. She's been gone again. But now she comes back broken.
Right.
So what does that do to the two of them? Because they just got back to kind of sort of being Fitzsimmons from the first season, and now this happens. What do you think it's going to do? What do you think that the fallout is going to be?
Well, I don't think they're ever going to get back to the first season dynamic with them. It's never going to get back to that. But I don't know. This should be kind of interesting, because I mean, a lot of this probably bring them even closer than they were before. I
hope so. As a you know, get much more than the opposite, because we had a whole season of them like apart, of them not talking to each other. We've had that now,
and with him as hallucinating,
yeah, you know, him going nuts and not talking to each other and being weird around each other. I mean, I honestly don't want to have to sit through another season of that. like we've done this before. We've done this song. You two have done this song and dance before.
Yeah.
You don't need to do this.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's gonna be. I just hope they don't drag it out.
Right.
You know, we got Simmons got sucked into the machine at the last episode of last season. Now we're second episode into the new season, and she's back.
Yeah,
we've rescued her. We didn't drag that out.
She did not come back as Squirrel Girl.
We dragged her out.
We dragged her out. Yes, we did. Boom, boom.
And sadly, she did not come back as Squirrel Girl.
Not that we know.
Not that we know.
Yeah,
that's true.
All we've done is all we know is that when she has a nightmare, she jumps up really quick and goes, ah! And she has a stick in her hand.
Although, you know, that's the second show, because over on Doctor Who, Missy was sharpening a stick.
Yes.
You remember when, you know, and she turns to Clara and she says, get your own stick. And now,
don't I get one of those? You know, get your own.
Simmons has her own stick.
So are you suggesting that...
I'm suggesting everybody should get your own stick.
So it's not... So it's time for Leo Fitz to ask her if he can get a pointy stick, and she says, get your own.
Sure. Sure. Well, I think the other thing, you know, to speak to your idea about Simmons coming back changed, I think psychologically she changed. I don't think that the Kree monolith did anything to her, because pretty much the entire episode, you know, the plot thread surrounding this pretty well established that it's just a portal.
Yeah, right.
It's a gateway. It goes from one place to another place. So we can rule out Simmons coming back changed physiologically in any way.
Well, if she did, then Fitz is too, because he went through the portal.
But exactly. He didn't spend as much time there, though.
No. Well, because it's not the portal itself. It would be the world
that
would do it.
Yeah,
it would
be something over there that would change
that
it.
Planet.
But given that it was, as far as we know, SETI Alpha 3, you know, the barren wasteland and the sand's blowing, and, you know, we didn't stumble across any cargo containers. So I don't know that there's anything there other than what was hunting Simmons. Whatever this monster, beast, growly thing was, we never saw it. I have a feeling we'll see it in her nightmares.
Wait a minute. I think I remember Marvel had a growling monster beast. I don't know. Oh, maybe not.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure
they
do.
A lot of growling monster beasts.
Yeah. But I think that we might get glimpses of it in her flashbacks.
Possibly.
But I don't think they're going to spend too much time on it. Maybe. I don't know. Because we got so much other stuff going on. We've got Von Strucker's kid signing up for a class in Garner's school.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. May and Hunter going after Ward. So there's that plot thread. We still got Garner evaluating Inhumans. Next week we go back to Daisy and Lincoln, you know, trying to recruit Lincoln into the team. We know she's going to eventually get him on board because he's a regular.
Unless he goes to Hydra.
I doubt he will. He just mainly wants to be left alone. I think the only way that he's going to be left alone is if he makes a deal and says, okay, look, fine. I'll help you find him. I'll help you train him. And then I leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you leave me alone. You give me a new identity and I can disappear finally. I think that's the only way you're going to get him on the team.
Right.
Is for him to sit there and make it contingent on getting his own private, I want to hide life back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Or they can convince him that maybe the new life isn't acceptable. Because he's not going to get his old life back.
Well, I don't know. Well, see, this is it. I don't think he wants his old life back. I think he just wants a normal life. And the only way he can do that is for nobody to know who he is or what he does. And that's going to involve getting a new identity and going somewhere brand new where they don't know him. And S.H.I.E.L.D. promises to leave him alone.
They never do.
I think that's the deal that Lincoln's going to try to make in order to come in on the team.
I think he may. There's a very, very good chance, I think, that he's going to figure out that, you know, this may be the best thing for him.
Either that, or we get a mini arc where he still doesn't want to, still doesn't want to, still doesn't want to, still doesn't want to. Lash shows up and threatens Daisy and whoever else in humans that she's got, and he finally steps up.
And I've got to
do this. I got to take one for the team and be part of the team in order to fight this thing that's trying to kill us all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That could be the catalyst that gets him on board too.
Could be.
And maybe.
I still think whatever monster was chasing Gemma is going to show up, because I mean
I think it's going to show up in brief glimpses in the flashback nightmares. And then maybe it'll show up in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
It'll have to show up somewhere, probably in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, because why would they be establishing this planet and have that, instead of her just being lost there, she's being chased, hunted by something.
Yeah.
Why would they establish that if they're not going to play on it?
How did she stay alive for 6 months?
Exactly.
That's the other question. I was looking at the cast list on IMDb for this episode.
Uh-huh.
We had Mr. Fantastic in this episode.
Oh, really?
Did you not? Did you see? Okay, so back in 1893, 1839, 18, yeah. whenever that, uh-huh. when we uh-huh. opened up, it was 1839. We opened up at the castle.
Mm-hmm.
There are all these people standing around. They're drawing the drawing the stones, you know, drawing lots to figure out who's going to be the one to go in, right? Nobody's ever come back. And they have the Cree portal there. This mm-hmm. is in the castle where we finally right. end up going later. The guy who was in charge, the white-haired guy with the beard who uh-huh. kind of pushed the volunteer through the door,
yeah.
that was Alex Hyde White.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Mr. Fantastic himself, Alex Hyde White, had a brief appearance in a current Marvel show.
Maybe he's an ancestor of Reed Richards, and somehow they're going to try and get the Fantastic Four into the. I don't
oh,
know.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Bartholomew Richards the Third,
Lord Thornley is how he's officially listed in the credits.
So maybe it's awesome. A descendant on his mother's side.
It could be, but in that, if I was like.
Thornley.
Yeah, Alex Hyde White was in the modern Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now all we need is for the other three to show up somewhere.
Oh, that'd be
just
cool.
Just to throw them in, just to see, because nobody's going to recognize them. Because how long has it been since that was what?
We call them Easter eggs.
When was that? When did that movie come out? 84?
That was before I was born.
Don't say that.
Yeah. I don't exactly remember on that one. The thing is, I'm familiar with the movie. I did not get to see that version.
It's online.
Okay.
It's online. It's actually, well, I say that. It's been a while since I've seen it. It's on YouTube. Somebody has put the whole thing on YouTube. So you could do a search for Fantastic Four. I think you got to put Corman's name on there too.
That was that was 1990s, like 94, something like that.
It was. I'm looking to the internet. It was 1994.
Oh, I was alive. I was five.
Shut up.
Yeah, because I actually I take that back. I started watching that, but I didn't get much time because I had to go do something else.
So. You know it. It's not as bad as you would expect it to be.
Being a Corman film?
Being a Corman film, being a Corman film that only had $2 million, being a Corman film that only had $2 million that nobody ever expected him to finish mm-hmm. because all they were doing was keeping the rights.
Right.
I mean, Constantine Films was sitting there going, oh, all rights are going to expire. We'd better do something before they do go back to Marvel, so let's make a movie.
Basically the exact same thing that the reason the last Fantastic Four movie got
and
made.
You know what was funny? Yeah. I'm sitting there in the new Fantastic Four movie, and I'm sitting there with my kid.
You should probably just call it James the Four.
And I, well, yeah,
it wasn't all that fantastic.
James and I are sitting there watching the beginning credits roll, and Constantine Films is still there.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, wait a minute. I see what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You can't pull the rug over my eyes. Mm. I did not realize that they were still involved with the whole thing. So apparently, I mean, that gives you even more believability that they're making that movie just to keep the rights. Because I thought 20th Century Fox owns the rights.
They could have bought out Constantine.
They own the
Films.
Distribution rights.
Ah.
But I would expect, if Constantine Films is still involved somehow, I would guess, and this is a complete guess on my part, that they own the production rights. They own the film rights. 20th Century Fox owns the distribution rights to the X-Men and the Fantastic Four characters.
Is Constantine Films owned by Fox?
Not that I know of.
Okay, because I thought maybe if it's a subsidiary,
yeah.
then they would still say, oh, it's owned by Fox, even though it's a subsidiary.
Well, originally it's not. I don't know if at some point they bought them or not, but Constantine Films is not even, they're not even an American company.
Yeah, but Fox is an American company, but American companies own companies around the world.
Yeah, but Constantine Films is not.
Right.
Constantine Films is a production company. I think they're
that doesn't mean that Fox hadn't bought them.
True.
So
true.
But I don't
know. It'll be interesting to see if there's some kind of a relationship there. I know that Fox owns enough of the rights that they get to keep making the movies. One of these days, we're going to get a decent Fantastic Four film. I thought the first two were okay. I thought Chiklis was great as the Thing. Mm-hmm. And Jessica Alba was all right as Sue Storm. Yeah. I mean, she looks the part. And
I guess that's pretty much what you can say about most Jessica Alba performances. She was okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Good job, well, Jess. Oh, that was really good, Jessica. That was really good. You get a gold star.
Well, Ian Gruffudd did fine as Reed Richards.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty much what you can say about the cast. Like, fine. They're not bad. They're just fine.
The new one, Trank's film, everybody was just completely miscast.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was just no reason to have that group. And to hear the stories of how he treated Kate Mara because he didn't want her on the cast and the producers said she's on the cast. That whole thing was just a train wreck from the beginning. And I hear that
none of the cast has even seen the film. Mm. Like the main cast, they haven't watched it.
I don't think they have.
They have no interest in it.
Now, Jordan might have. Michael B. Jordan. He might have seen it. But I don't think anybody else. Yeah, well, I take that back. The kid who played Reed Richards.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think he's probably seen it because apparently right before it got released and before Trank had his little "it's not my fault" meltdown on Twitter.
Right.
Apparently he sent a note. He sent an email out to the cast, maybe the crew as well, saying, "Oh, this is going to be so great! You know, this rah-rah cheerleader thing. And apparently, one of the principal cast members, he hadn't been identified, but one of the principal cast sent a note back saying, "You're smoking crack." I mean, it's basically, that's not the exact words. I don't know exactly what it was. I can't quote it, but it was the general sentiment of, "Dude, get a life. What are you doing?
Perhaps it was actually, "Thou smoketh crack."
Well, and it the reaction kind of makes me wonder if it was the kid who played Reed. Because Jordan and Trank are friends. It was one of the reasons why Jordan got cast as Johnny Storm.
Because he had been in Chronicle.
He's the director's buddy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, since Kate Mara hadn't seen it, that only leaves either the kid who played Ben or the one who played Reed. And since Reed and Trank didn't get along, I haven't even bothered to remember the name of the kid who played Reed Richards.
He's one of those rising stars.
Well, and he's in the Divergent movies.
I don't care about those. I just know that I just know that he was good in Whiplash.
See, he doesn't either. He doesn't care about the Divergent movies either.
Nobody cares about the
Divergent
movies.
He's only doing those movies because he's contractually obligated to do it.
And there's a lot of money in it.
He's been trash-talking his own work.
Hmm.
I totally support that. It's they're bland.
Yeah, they're not very good movies at all. But, that's where we are now.
It's diet Hunger Games.
Mediocrity wins.
Yeah.
I could go on a personal rant on that, but I'm not going to. Okay, so what have we learned in this episode tonight? Now that we've diverged and now we're swinging back,
we do digress on the show, we kept it in Marvel.
Ward is still building a Hydra team. He wants a lean, mean fighting machine.
Why?
This is
what I didn't get at the end of last season. Why does Ward want to do this? Oh, okay, I want revenge. Why? What is your goal? What's your end game?
Well, I think right now I don't think they've revealed what it is. He doesn't have one.
He's just grumpy.
And that's a good point. Ward wasn't in a position of power in Hydra before to begin with.
No.
There's nothing in his backstory, nothing in what we know about the character and his relationship to Hydra to indicate that he's got any pull whatsoever with any of the rest of the cells.
He's the muscle.
Yeah,
always.
He was never leadership material.
He was a very well trained thug.
I still think, and that theory is still out there, that they are going to make him the Marvel Cinematic Universe Taskmaster.
It's entirely possible.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know that that's going to be the case because he doesn't have any powers.
No.
But, you know, Taskmaster is the trainer. Yeah. He's the one who teaches people. And so I don't know.
They're passing him off as the big bad at this point.
Uh-huh.
And it would be really interesting because Coulson, you know, battled Gonzalez with his version of
Shield 2.0, yeah.
Yep. And it would be interesting to see what Ward runs into with possibly other Hydra factions.
Well, see, the thing about it is, though, this whole Hydra thing has been played out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Hydra's done. We got the whole big reveal in Winter Soldier that Hydra infiltrated, and we had a whole back season, you know, the rest of season one and into season two, Hydra.
And they got beat. Yeah.
They're done.
So I'm going to piece them back together. And do what? What are you going to do?
Well, and given the fact that we're already still, you know, that we're building to Civil War, we have that faction versus faction story to contend with throughout the season, because that's going to build up what we got in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that we've already been told from producers is that the stuff going on in the show is going to build up to Civil War. Mm-hmm. So there's that connection that's going to be made between your task force that the president has got going and Coulson's S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, it could be that...
Which now doesn't have their logo on the cars.
Yeah, well, it could be that Coulson's just going to be... kind of a nuisance villain every now and again, and he's just got a...
Do you mean Ward?
Yeah, Ward.
You said Coulson.
Sorry, Coulson. Yeah. Ward. It's late. I'm tired. Yeah. But anyway, perhaps Ward is going to be like a kind of an ongoing just a nuisance villain with a hyperinflated ego. Here's the thing. If he's got a hyperinflated ego, and that's what's driving him,
But that's such a waste for the character, though. I mean, when they turned him into the villain, we talked about this last season. You know, turning him into the villain was probably the best thing you could do with him.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because it finally made him interesting.
Uh-huh.
Now he's got no purpose as a character. I mean, there's just this whole idea of Ward rebuilding Hydra, like Chris says. There's no justification for it yet that we've seen. Doesn't mean that they're not going to be. But at the same time,
they keep showing him building and building and building, but we don't know what he's building towards. So it's like, okay, Gert, you caught another Pokemon. Good job.
Well, here's the thing.
Von Stricker, I choose you.
But if you realize when he was driving through that, you know, that parking garage thing, there were those guys just standing there. And I think those were trainees.
They're all his recruits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so he is building something, but they're not telling us what the point is.
They're teasing us at this point.
Well,
is what it is.
If they don't have any kind of a payoff by mid-season, then we're looking at a repeat of season one where things get drawn out and dragged out, and finally people are going to lose their patience. Mm. And I'm hoping that doesn't happen because so far, you know, back half of season two, especially all the momentum from last season and now going into this season, so far it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you bring in Ward's a wild card at this point,
right?
You know, just from a story standpoint, because, yeah, you're right, Chris. There is no discernible purpose behind that plot line yet.
At least not that these two episodes have shown us.
No.
The last episode of the last season and these two episodes, he's just walking around looking kind of smug. Look at me, I didn't shave this morning and I got a $30 haircut. I'm going to beat you up.
I had a thought.
Okay.
I had a theory to spring into my head.
We've got to have a theory.
Okay, so follow me here. Season 3 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is supposed to build into Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Civil War is going to be about Avengers 2.5 fighting Avengers 2.5. Okay, it's Captain America versus Iron Man and registration and all of it, right? It's the superhero registration act.
We're with you.
Okay, now, what happens in every movie where the hero good guy and the hero good guy fight, what happens after that?
There has to be a big guy, big bad for them to unite together against.
Bing! And so, since we know that Baron Zemo is going to be in the next movie, how about all of this buildup for Ward and Hydra combined with the new Baron von Strucker and new Baron Zemo?
Mini von Strucker.
Yeah, Mini von Strucker, Mini Zemo, and the new Hydra, they become the bad guy at the end of Civil War that Captain America and Iron Man look at each other and go, we must fight. But we better fight them first. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I can see that all of these pieces would go together in any way, shape, or form.
Unless this new Baron guy, unless they're just going to use him the same way they did Baron von Strucker in the second Avengers movie, where it's just the opening bit where, hey, I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
He's just the opening.
Yeah, that was
he's
such
got
a
the money,
waste.
Though.
It was
he's
such
got
a
the resources.
Waste for him.
But the new one has the resources.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the connections. He doesn't have all of the, you know, like he said tonight, he says, Dad didn't let me see anything that was going on in the office. He didn't let me play with the toys. So he doesn't have any of the connections to Hydra anyway.
And he's being used. He's becoming an agent. He's not pulling any strings.
Well, he's just going to
Ward,
be a figurehead.
Yeah, Ward is sending him in to be his eyes and ears on this dude.
Yeah.
But he was kind of torturing one of the old heads by driving his car with him on the hood.
Yeah, here's what I think is going to happen with that. Young von Strucker is going to be instrumental in kidnapping Andrew in order to draw out
May
and Hunter.
Who are already looking for Ward anyway.
Right.
So,
But see, Ward's baiting a trap. It's a trap! And of course, May and Hunter are going to know it's a trap. They're going to walk into it anyway because it's a trap.
I thought it was kind of odd. Hunter had the biggest response to Simmons coming back.
Yeah.
Everyone looked just sort of, okay. he was the only one that actually seemed excited, like, this is great! Yeah. Oh, my... Everyone was like, oh.
Fitz, okay. You're awesome!
Mac didn't even look. He just went over to Daisy, like, hey, you okay, Daisy?
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on? Oh, everyone's covered in dirt. Yeah.
I think...
Everyone just sort of shrugged it. Well, okay.
I think they were in shock.
Yeah.
Okay.
But...
Well, because everybody has written her off. Simmons was dead.
Yeah.
Fitz was the only one that said, no, she's not. She's still out there, and I'm going to find her.
But you notice when Hunter was excited, and he was saying, Fitz, you're awesome, that type of thing, it kind of tells you what Hunter thought of Fitz. He's got a lot of respect for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, that goes back to some of their interaction from last season where, you know, you know, everybody knew that Fitz was broken and had something to prove. Mac was certainly instrumental in bringing him out, but I think some of that too, you know, just him trying to fit in and be part of the team. And Hunter's one of these wild cards anyway that just you never know what to expect from him. But it does feel like it's within his character to react like that because he's for all that he puts on the face that he doesn't care, you know, the Han Solo face, deep down inside, he's got a real respect for this team.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, he really has a connection with this group. He feels like he belongs with this group. And I think that's something that he doesn't really acknowledge so much.
Yeah, but, I guess I was just sort of, I was kind of hoping for a bit more celebration from the team when Simmons came back. I was hoping people would seem a bit happier.
Well, they probably were in shock because they expected to send in a probe, not Fitz.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
He dove in.
Well, and you know, they're expecting him to come back by himself.
Right.
So I think there was that. I think it's a combination of things, and I think we'll start seeing reactions to her being back next episode.
I hope so.
Hope so. We'll see. All right. So next episode, don't know that we're going to get Lash, but we're going to get more of Lincoln. Mm-hmm. More of Daisy trying to convince Lincoln to join the team. Mm-hmm. And I expect we'll get a lot of Fitz and Simmons back and forth and nightmares and more of the stick.
Yeah. Something I was going to mention last week, just happened to think of it this week, as also Heroes as their little reboot. I haven't seen the reboot yet, but thinking about the old episodes of it, how it started off as a show looking for the superhumans, mm-hmm. and it turns mm-hmm. into this big conspiracy show.
Right.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started off this big conspiracy show. Now they're looking for superhumans. It's like they've switched plots.
Speaking of that, and that gives me a good entry point to give this programming note. Mr. Pryor here has been writing the recaps for Heroes Reborn.
Yep, I've got two of those up right now.
Yeah, scififorme.com is where you can find that. And it's also where you can find our other podcasts, as well as news articles from around the genre community. And speaking of community, you can join ours. You can find us over on the social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, Tumblr, and YouTube. And you can leave a comment either in any of those places. You can also send us an email, level1187@scififorme.com, or you can call our hotline, which is 573-42-SCIFI. Let us know your thoughts on this episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or any of our shows. And we'll do it all again next week sometime.
Woot woot.
So that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. Dan Handley.
Good night.
Christopher Pryor.
Good night, all you lovely people.
And my name is Jason Hunt. For all of us here at Sci-Fi for Me, we will be back next week.
Goodbye. This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.